Is that better? Very good. Okay, sorry about that. We also were at a campaign kickoff event last night. It was loud in there. We were screaming at each other, so my voice is a little crackly today, so bear with me. But again, I'm grateful to be here. And again, this year, having moved home from Delaware, we were in Delaware for a number of years, moved home to Cecil County, and had the great opportunity to work on Defend the Guard, which I believe is the singular most important piece of legislation in our time that libertarians can be working on. And I'm grateful that here in Maryland, libertarians lead on that issue as they do in many states. I think that Defend the Guard has given libertarians a taste of what it feels like to instill fear in politicians. Yeah. And I would make the argument that instilling fear in politicians should precisely be our goal. So I'm proud of you, proud of the time you put in on Defend the Guard, but particularly proud of two people, and that is Scott Spaulding and Tim Miller. I know you know that Scott has led on this issue for a number of years and done incredible work. He deserves all the credit for that. Tim, in the same way, behind-the-scenes work that you probably didn't see get done, but just as a plug for Defend the Guard, when we ask you to make those calls, when we ask you to spend 10 minutes of your day making politicians feel fear that they might not get reelected, it's important that you do it. So I know Scott appreciates it, and I know Tim appreciates it. But I am not here to talk about Defend the Guard today, although I think that effort and the concepts I want to talk to you about are related. I'm also not here with a speech that will motivate you to save the Libertarian Party or a caucus or whatever interior politics that will not matter if we cannot pull back from the brink of World War III. I left when you were working on your bylaws. It's funny to watch the world burn and do bureaucracy, isn't it? Yeah, and this is not a ding at LP Maryland. I was the vice chair of Libertarian Party of Delaware for a long time. And if you know anything about Delaware, you will know we were mired in bureaucracy. And I always remember that feeling of being in meetings and thinking, the world is burning outside. We are called to action, and here we are worrying about bylaw number 8 and whether or not it has the proper punctuation at the end. Anyway, this is not a ding on LP Maryland. I've kind of been there, done that over a number of years. So what I want to propose to you today, and I'll give some words of caution here, is that there are a few parallels that mark the work of Christians and libertarians in such a way that draws those two groups together and makes the work that should be done jointly imperative. I'm going to argue that the two are inextricably tied right now, and that the work that both groups need to do done well might slow our march to World War III. And that's the argument I'm going to make today. So I'm here to just kind of share with you some things I have been thinking about. We each have seen what is going on in the media right now. We each know we march toward war every day. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So some of you today are one or the other. You may be a Christian, you may be a libertarian, you may be neither, or you may be both. But I promise to try to make this relevant for all of you, because I think the one thing we can agree on is that we all strive for peace. There's something here for everyone. The overarching points I'm going to make is that advancing peace will take allies, and that where the work of Christians and libertarians intersect is at one of the most crucial points in history and over one of the most complex topics, and maybe, just maybe, each being successful in their endeavors could help avoid decades more of bankers' wars. I suspect also such an alliance would make space and time for preparation for wars with merit, which we are likely to fight in the near future. So this is not an anti-war speech. This is more of a prepare for war speech. In service of this, I propose that there are two parallels right now that must be acted on by the Christian and the libertarian, and especially by those who might be both. Actually, I think there are four, but I only am going to talk to you about two today because the others I have not fleshed out very well. So I want to talk to you today about the fact that both groups has the task of accounting for people in their midst who claim the name but clearly do not understand the principles. And then I want to talk about the fact that there is some crossover in terms of potential allies, again, as we seek to stave off World War III. I'm going to explore two of these with you. So I want to talk a little bit first about accountability, our first commonality. Has this also started working now? So again, I'm making an argument that we have two groups. They are different groups. I'm not making the insinuation here that they should be synonymous necessarily. But our first commonality lies in the necessity of accountability for those who would claim the name of, for example, Christ, or the name of libertarian. Both Christians and libertarians encounter individuals who claim allegiance to our causes, yet seem to misunderstand foundational principles or distort them for personal or political agendas. So I'm going to offer what I believe is a primary example of this problem here with the linkages of libertarianism and Christianity that is often claimed by the America First crowd. So I'm going to borrow America First as kind of our archetype here today and think through what the implications are of dealing with the America First crowd for Christians and for libertarians. So one of the things you could be mistaken for forgiving about America First crowd is that they actually put America first or believe in any, even small l, libertarian principles. Let's leave their big government spending habits aside and focus momentarily only on foreign policy, which has been interesting because I think we have seen their very quick heel turn in the last few months that indicates without a doubt that the blood and treasure of the United States of America is not in their interest necessarily when we are called by Israel to send our troops, to send our money. Because that's where this is headed. We are only ever days away from American boots on the ground in this growing war, and those warning that we must protect some other country at all costs would gladly sacrifice your children. Yes, these are the wartime armchair quarterbacks whose only known plays are those espoused to him by the media and for whom watching your sons and daughters and American treasure die in war for satisfying sport. It's cute that that person thinks they are America first, and I'm being mean here, but next I'm going to argue that this person is your most likely ally. Why? So why the quick heel turn in foreign policy? Why the quick heel turn on war, since this group resoundingly and rightly rejects interventionism in Ukraine? It is in answering this question that we find our first parallel between the Christian and libertarians and what they must deal with. Our schools, our media, our many churches are complicit in making the argument that the U.S.'s role in world affairs is dispensationalist and interventionist in terms that render this moment an attack on both Christianity and libertarian principles. America First is not a subset of any libertarian movement, and their support for intervention in a war that they might somehow claim is connected to their oft-professed religion demonstrate an emptiness of their virtue. There is no biblical mission for the Christian in service of Israel's war, quite the opposite. So since the America First crowd claims both a basis in Christianity and attempts to boast their libertarian ideals from time to time, it's critical that we roundly reject that they claim a basis in either. We are accountable for calling this out when we see it and for using all the tools at our disposal to educate, and this is our first parallel. But the conundrum that we have here over the fact that an America Firster will espouse Christian and libertarian ideals is that they are not living the virtues they claim, and yet a partnership with them may be our only hope if we seek to stave off World War III. But how is this type of person our potential ally, Amy, after all the mean things you have just said about them, and I meant all of it? Bear with me here. It is because I believe these types are well-meaning but misinformed. I do not believe that the America Firster believes in a culture of death, even though if right now on the matter of Israel, for example, this archetype recalling his lifelong conditioning by the media, would be ready to send your children to slaughter simply to stick a thumb in the eye of insane liberals like AOC. to own the libs, as the kids say. Well, and because his pastor has probably told him at this point it's the right thing to do. I believe this person can be salvaged, because I believe his motivation is something we can get our heads around. He sees himself as a counterweight to the liberals, who do believe in a culture of death. Surely you don't think they actually care about Palestinian babies. We know what they do to babies here. We also know what they do to children here. Children here are knifed and carved up like science projects. So we will not make the argument that a liberal would be a decent ally. So our prototypical America Firster must see that there are three sides. You, as the Christian or libertarian, maybe both, have an opportunity to present that third side. And it is here that we find another commonality. And that's that we must walk next to people with compassion. In a world that is quick to judge and very slow to understand, it is essential that we guide their awakenings with patience and empathy. And that is not something that either group is known to do very well, especially libertarians. So this does mean not only preaching our values, but demonstrating them through our actions and our interactions. This is a place where, again, both groups of people struggle. We have seen people who are exploring the principles of libertarianism attacked for lacking a full understanding when they first stumble upon libertarian principles, for not quite being able to immediately shed decade upon decade of lie by the government and the media. We shun people for that. They're smeared across the internet, and they rarely ever come back. We're losing people to that mentality. Christians often are the same, quick to judge, slow to explain, only casting judgment instead of sharing a path to Christ. This turns people away when Christians do it, and it turns people away when libertarians do it. I was a neoconservative war hawk atheist for many years. And I'm not the only one, am I? Yeah. And I will spend my life in atonement for cheering on a war I would not fight in myself while I was at college having fun. I will spend my life in atonement for that. What a sin. Who cares, right? So what? So what does all of this mean? If libertarians and Christians both have the potential to focus on a common subset of people who claim some of our ideals but who aren't living them out perfectly, how do we act on that? What conclusions might we draw if, in fact, there is some commonality with respect to mission and alliances? And I think that there are two areas where we can focus. We should seek to be taken seriously. And I know that's not fun to hear for libertarians especially. I know. We want to be wacky. We want to be silly. We don't want to fit in. We want to make sure we share with the world upon their very opportunity to see us out of the gate that we are different. We color outside the lines. This doesn't help. My spirit animal has a purple mohawk, I promise you. But I get to stand up here and say things like what I'm saying today. And then I get to go out into my community and confront people who have these challenged ideals that we need to tackle, right? Because people take me seriously. And so that should be the effort of libertarians and Christians. And I'd argue that there is much crossover in terms of what these two disparate groups need to work on to be taken seriously, to change minds. They're good to their neighbors, people who should be taken seriously. They don't gossip, they are plain spoken, and they are not cruel. And each thrives in a family environment. Each thrives in an environment that shirks off the dependence of government, both groups. You have heard, I believe it is Jeff Deist, who most commonly uses the term natural elites. I'm not sure that he coined it, but he is the one who uses it. Look around you. Figure out who those are. Those are your leaders here. Those are your leaders in your civic organizations. Those are your leaders at church. And those are the people who can speak to the America Firsters, who can tell them why their ideas are wrong, and who can tell them that there is a better way, that there is a third way. Thanks for those claps. I think there's also an opportunity here. So my calls to action here feel a little bit nebulous. I'm just thinking through these things myself, if I'm honest with you. I don't have a prescript set of 10 steps for us to take together today. But I do think there's one more thing we can do, something that my husband and I have been talking about lately. I think that it is important to understand your potential allies and your enemies. But here we need to understand our allies. And I certainly believe that because the America First crowd wants to claim some of these things, a misunderstood Christianity, a misunderstanding, absolutely, of libertarian ideals that they do from time to time profess to have, they are the most primed for a course correction. And this room is not full enough of people to believe that you don't need to recruit from somewhere. It's not coming from the left. I think we need to take people at their word that they want to be the things they describe themselves as, but you must correct how they think about those things. That's your job. So how do you get to know them? You send your natural elites out into the community. You make them, you've got, I mean, James Cook is it, right? He's doing the thing. James Cook is a phenomenal example. He's not the only one. You guys are doing a phenomenal job. James Cook is the example. He walks the walk. He talks the talk. He does not walk in with a purple mohawk, like I would like to, but don't make me go back on my word. Unfortunately, because this room is not full enough of people, no LP room is. I want to be clear about that. What we have to do next, unfortunately, is not to serve in an insular LP. We have to send our best and brightest out. That may mean to other political parties. That may mean to other civic organizations. That may mean that maybe they're not here in the room with you. But it is time to ally with people. It is time to change hearts and minds, and it is absolutely time to grow the number of people who will work with you on liberty. I think we are probably running out of time, not for my speech, but you might think that. I think we're probably running out of time to live a stable life in this country. And again, Christians and libertarians, I believe, but mostly for those of us who are both, are called to act right now. I think that the world is a sinister place. The worst of it is being put in front of you. It is before your very eyes today. They show you every day what they are willing to do to your children, what we are willing to do with the war machine to children in other countries. And we sit in our living rooms and we come to meetings like this and we worry about our bylaws. It is not enough. We must add to this group. I would argue that we can do that by taking a look at growing the community of libertarians and Christians, thinking about how those two groups might align, knowing that there is a common opportunity with America Firsters, probably to recruit, probably to change some hearts and minds. I think it offers an awful lot of hope for this group. And I wish you the best of luck in your work.